this whole idea came about because if you think about the college experience for today's 18-year-old, it's pretty dated. Look at the technology they're using to do pivotal things, really important things like choosing classes and choosing a college and choosing a major and choosing which professor they want to study with. These things are all done by today's 18-year-olds using tools from 20 years ago. And they're not intuitive to those students at all because it doesn't look or feel like anything that they're used to using.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Gardner. Hey, Brad.
Hello, hello.
We're going to have fun today because we have an opportunity to speak with our friend and former colleague. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
I am thrilled to be here.
Dr. Aaron Crisp is the VP of Academic Affairs and Innovation for Campus EDU. Prior to joining the ed tech startup, she worked in higher education for nearly a decade, leading online learning, assessment, and strategic innovation. Erin earned her doctorate in instructional systems technology from Indiana University and loves all things teaching, learning, and technology. Her early career was spent teaching English language arts, which was followed by several years facilitating teacher professional development for Northwest Evaluation Association. These days, you can find Erin doing something outdoorsy, collaborating on a research project, or watching movies with her three nearly adult sons. We're excited to welcome our guest, Erin Crisp, to the podcast.
I think she's still a colleague, though, isn't she?
Is she?
Do we still count her
always,
as a colleague?
Always.
Okay.
Even though we have had the opportunity to work with Aaron closely in the past, and apparently currently, according to Brad's timeline here, we are going to get to know her much better. Now, we have the inside scoop and already know that she raises chickens, but we're going to kick off this podcast by asking her an in-depth question about chickens. So, Aaron, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yes, I knew this question was intentionally chosen because of my chicken hobby. And as a chicken farmer, a hobby chicken farmer, I would have to say that the chicken definitely comes first because, you know, you raise the baby chicken, then you get the eggs.
So what are the actual responsibilities of a chicken farmer?
It is pretty easy. I got to say, chickens are like the easiest pet ever. You can fill up the food and water and leave them for like a week if you want to, or you can be out there every night talking to them and feeding them and bringing them veggies, and then they'll be your best friend.
And which of those two types of farmers are you?
I'm a little bit fickle as a farmer. So I have to say, like, most of the time I'm out there in the evenings and in the mornings with my cup of coffee, and they're very relaxing to watch. But then if life gets hectic and busy and I don't have time for them for a while, they're totally cool with that. They have little like walnut brains and they don't even remember that they miss me.
So I'm just fascinated by this. How often do you pick up the eggs?
Every day.
And if somebody isn't producing, do they become your dinner?
Yes, actually.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh, no. Okay.
That's the thing about being a farmer. You have to understand that there's a cycle to things. And, you know, you have eggs and then you get roast chicken.
Oh, man.
So you obviously don't have names for you don't have names for these chickens.
Oh, no. They all have names. Yes. They all have names.
Oh. Yep. And then you turn around and eat them.
Yes.
So on the meal on the meal planning calendar, it's like Tuesday night, Sally.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. My boys make fun of me. They're like, tonight's dinner brought to you by Ida the chicken.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Please go to the next question, Brad.
I think we need to. Would you rather go skydiving, mountain climbing, or deep sea fishing?
Easy. Mountain climbing for sure.
Okay.
If you could experience one childhood game, book or movie in virtual reality, what would you choose and why?
So the first thing that came to mind was Alice in Wonderland. I think that would be super fun as virtual reality. But then I thought about Jumanji, both the movie, because it's a movie and a game. And
right.
I think you could make a Jumanji virtual reality that's like a choose your own adventure kind of thing where you play the game in VR. And then as the game happens, you know, things happen virtually in your reality. So I think that'd be super fun.
I think I just heard a door slam because I think Mike Jones has already left and is off creating that right now.
Yeah.
Great idea. Okay, last question. If you could have one feature to the current Zoom platform, what would it be?
So I've actually thought about this before. When we do our all staff meeting and there's like 30 of us in the meeting and we're all on Zoom on the little tiles, I think it would be awesome to have a Just Dance feature. You guys know the video game Just Dance?
Yeah.
Where you could like turn on a song and there would be movements and everybody would like stand up and do like a 30-second dance break where Brad, I can see you doing this. You're shaking.
Absolutely.
Where we all do like a dance break. Wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. It would.
Yeah.
Some of our team earlier today were in a conference with a future guest. And to have a conversation with him, you had to create an avatar. And then you're placed in a room with his avatar for the conversation. So things are looking up in terms of what might happen in the future.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. I worked with a professor one time who did like a virtual art show gallery in Second Life with all of her art students at the end of her art course. That was super interesting too.
Yeah. I was almost late to this meeting that Brad's describing because I wasn't expecting to have to build an avatar before entering the meeting. And it was asking me hair color and what I was going to wear and all these questions that are so important. And I was almost late. Picking out my little person.
But anyway. And they also found out the hard way they had a button called kick. And if you click on kick, it throws that person out of the room.
No way.
Yes.
Tell Aaron how we discovered that feature.
Well, you tell her because I wasn't there.
Okay. Well, a said person, I will not say the person, but it was either Mike
Jones,
our colleague, Brady Boswell. They were both in the room as well. And one of them hovered over the avatar of the other and saw that there was an opportunity to kick. And so they thought that playfully they would try kicking the virtual person against the other virtual person.
Right.
Didn't realize that kick actually meant, see ya, you're out of the meeting. So
kick you out.
That did nice. Happen.
Nice.
But anyway, for another day.
Yep.
Okay, we're moving on to some more serious questions, but actually these are just as exciting because we're, if we haven't said it already, so honored to have you here and to hear from you. And these are questions that we've been wanting to ask you ourselves, as well as to have all of our listeners here as well. So you're an innovator, a lifelong learner, a researcher, and a respected leader. Can you tell us about your professional journey and just some of the major events and experiences that led you to where you are today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really fun question to think through. I think I could sum up probably all of those major life events in my journey with kind of one phrase that I live by without even knowing that I live by it. And that is, to whom much is given, much is required. And I feel like it's just innate in me. There was something that was like built into my DNA from birth that every time I learn something, every time I discover something new, I put it into practice. It's just what I do. I don't even have to think about it. It's just who I am. And so when I came out of my teacher education program and I learned about experiential learning and I was going into my first classroom and I'd learned about project-based learning and inquiry and the importance of creativity and innovation and project work, I just naturally put it into practice because someone told me this is how you teach. And as I was a teacher for a decade, and as I got looking around at other, you know, middle school and high school classrooms of what students were experiencing in other rooms, I realized, I'm a little weird. Like, not everybody teaches this way. And I rewrote my curriculum all the time because I kept finding new and fun ways to do things. And that was the most exciting part of my teaching to me, was finding ways to engage students and trying new technology and new tools, bringing blogs into our classroom way back when. That was like a new thing. And so I think every time I learned something new, I would put it into practice. And every time I did that, I would learn how much more there was to learn. And I would see the impact of that. And it was motivating for me to continue on learning and trying the next thing. So incorporating educational technology into my teaching was definitely one of those pivotal moments. Having all of my students, I taught English, composition, writing, language arts mostly. And when I had my students transition from writing on paper to blogging as a class and then blogging as a grade level for other classrooms to read, we had some pen pals who were reading our blogs and responding and commenting. That was pivotal because all of a sudden I saw these kids who were unmotivated, reluctant, I don't want to write more than two sentences, and they're writing like entire paragraphs and wanting to revise, and they're motivated to become better writers because they had a real audience and because they had technology. And so for me, that was, you know, pivotal because it just showed me the power of good educational technology employed well. And then I would say the next pivotal moment came when I started facilitating professional development for teachers with a company. And we just had some phenomenal training from people who have studied assessment and formative assessment and the power and importance of data and using data well as a teacher or in education in general. And that opened my eyes to this whole new world of using data for really important and valuable purposes. And I had kind of had the assumption, I think up until then, that I know my students, and I would hear it from other teachers, right? Like, I don't need test results to tell me who my students are and what they know and don't know. I can tell you in 30 seconds from, you know, teaching in front of my entire class of 30 kids, what's going on inside their heads. I kind of had that same, you know, pride. And I think studying data and formative assessment and instructional strategies around use of our data for the purpose of instruction really showed me that I didn't have a clue. Like, there was so much that was going on or not going on in students' minds that I was completely unaware of. And that was another really pivotal moment where I realized I was making a whole lot of assumptions about my students that were just completely unfounded, you know, for lots of different reasons. And then I would say a third pivot came when I transitioned from K-12 world into higher ed. So I was taking a lot of that experience in K-12 with instructional technology and assessment, formative assessment, use of data, instructional planning, and then using that to design courses for college level learners, and realized there is a lot that we've learned and studied in K-12 education, pedagogy, that is not being applied in higher ed. Higher ed is slow to transition. I was going to say it's late to the game, but it is happening in some places. But the application of learning science and the things that we know about good pedagogy now, brain science, neuroscience, applying that to learning in higher ed is really kind of at the beginning. And so I think that's another exciting place to be, to take the things that we've learned and apply them in higher ed.
I think for us, having continued to be your colleague, you are also very quick to share those experiences and insights with the rest of us. So not only do you put it into practice, but you also share it with a bunch of people around you, which also makes all of us better.
Yeah. I mean, that's to me how I learn it is, you know, I go and tell some other people about it and then they ask questions that I didn't think to ask.
Absolutely.
That's what forces me to actually learn it. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that.
That's good. That's good. So you're going to be starting with a company that's kind of a startup, Campus EDU. Tell us about what that company does and what your vision is for what they might be doing in the future.
Yeah. So at first, I really didn't have an interest in transitioning to go work for a startup full time. But then as I was engaged in the work as a consultant, just on the side, part time, I just got more and more excited about the work we were doing. And it's a very similar feeling to how I felt back when I was a K-12 teacher and I started incorporating blogs into my classroom with my students and saw the tremendous potential of that technology to impact the way I was teaching English. I feel the same way right now, where we're experimenting with this new suite of educational technology tools. There's a whole team of software developers working on building these tools right now. And the more they build those tools and I see the prototypes and we roll out some of the prototypes with some college partners, we have some college and university partners who are early kind of beta testers of these products. I see their excitement. I see the potential. And it just makes me excited to be a part of that and to be a part of building and creating something that I think could be really impactful for lots of students in the future.
So give us a quick rundown of what the company actually does.
Yeah, it's a suite of three educational technology tools that we're building, a discovery tool, a course platform, and an audit tool. And marketing has come up with fun names for those three things, but I can't think of what they are right now. So you have to look at the website. But that's the prototype software development names for those three things. This whole idea came about because if you think about the college experience for today's 18-year-old, it's pretty dated. Look at the technology they're using to do pivotal things, really important things like choosing classes and choosing a college and choosing a major and choosing which professor they want to study with. These things are all done by today's 18-year-olds using tools from 20 years ago. And they're not intuitive to those students at all because it doesn't look or feel like anything that they're used to using. It's clunky, it's redundant, it takes a ton of clicks to get anywhere. Sometimes you can't even get access to what you need. So first tool, the discovery tool, is very much like Netflix. It looks and feels just like Netflix when you're in it. It's very accessible on a mobile device, and it provides learners with the opportunity to choose courses, programs, majors, eventually probably even universities. They'll make some of their college choices on this platform that allows them to see trailers, video trailers of professors who teach this class or this content area, or maybe it's a video trailer for a whole major or a whole department. So, you know, we like to say we get a video trailer when we're renting a $3 download, but we get nothing when we're paying for a $2,000 class.
You don't really know
what's inside the box until you get there, and that's going to change. I mean, that has to change. So yeah. That's the discovery tool. It's very cool. It looks amazing. And so that'll be a tool that campuses can buy and update, and the tool's being built so that it's very easy for them to update it and maintain it on their own and keep it accurate, but it's tied into their ERP system so that it'll automatically stay updated too with new course ads and that kind of thing. The second tool is a course sharing platform. So another kind of element of the future, I think, is that I think we need more universities, not less. And I don't like the idea that all of these small universities are going to close and we're just going to be left with these giant mega universities, kind of the big conglomerates where, you know, things will just all merge together and we'll have these giant, massive universities. I would much rather be a part of something that helps small local colleges thrive, because I think there's a lot of value in students feeling connected to a geography, to a place, a sense of place and space, and an affinity group, right? Like my mom and dad, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles graduated from this school, or they had kids who went to this school. You know, we go to the football games, and all of that has community value. It has familial value. It has social value. And so I wanted to be a part of something that was going to help those small schools continue to thrive. We know that they're not going to thrive if they don't have an opportunity to share in a way that's mutually beneficial, to share courses, majors, programs, faculty members. So what the course sharing platform does is it allows schools to build a series of courses in conjunction with us, with the company, and we provide kind of a consistent instructional design for those courses so that students, if they're experiencing several of courses, are not experiencing five different LMSs, but they're experiencing the same type of course every time they take a campus EDU course. And we design those courses of, you know, with all the very best, you know, instructional design and accessibility and quality and those kinds of things. But what it allows small universities especially to do is to say, you know, we don't have enough faculty to have a Spanish major or to have a Mandarin major, or so languages is a key area, or we don't have enough faculty to teach in a computer science major or a software development major, which, you know, we have huge numbers of job openings in those areas and not enough graduates right now to fill all the job openings. But it allows them to say, you know, we have one Spanish faculty member, this other school has another one, this other school has another one. If we pooled our resources and we created these courses collaboratively, then we could all offer a Spanish major, and some of the courses would be taught by faculty from these other schools, but some of the courses would be taught here from our own faculty as well. So it's a platform that is going to enable that kind of sharing between institutions. And the courses feel very much like scrolling through a website. So as opposed to our current LMS look and feel that has lots of menus and clicking and folders and in and out and can be a little cumbersome for students, these courses feel just like scrolling through Instagram. It is like a big long feed with here's what you do next. Watch this video, read this, submit this assignment, watch this video, join a synchronous session. So another key feature of our instructional design for these courses is that they are blended courses. They're not entirely online or face-to-face, but they have synchronous components built in as well. So that's very exciting. I love the course platform, and that's really where I spend the majority of my time because I'm not a software developer.
Well, that was a great conversation. Thanks for being with us, Erin. We look forward to having you back again.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to it.
Be sure to come back next week as we finish our conversation with Erin Crisp.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.